Can emotional agility boost your resilience and supercharge your motivation? This is featuring Angie Miller. And join us on this deep dive conversation with her as she shares her insights on resilience and overcoming setbacks. Explore how motivation changes with age and circumstances, and understand how crucial self-compassion and emotional agility are to thriving in life's challenges. Angie brings her wealth of experience and wisdom to help us understand how we harness these qualities to live a more fulfilled, resilient life. Don't miss this enlightening interview. It's time to unlock your potential. Welcome to the Wellness Driven Life Show, where you're about to go on a wellness-driven ride. Welcome, and let me share a little bit about our guest today. Angie Miller is a mental health therapist, certified wellness coach, international speaker, author, and fitness educator. She hosts NASM's Strong Mind, Strong Body podcast and is the founder of Emotional Motion, a boutique coaching and retreat program that empowers women to transform their physical and emotional health. Inspired by her experience teaching stress management to university students, her fitness and yoga expertise, and her work as a therapist and mental health, Angie speaks at conferences worldwide on topics that bridge fitness and mental health. She is a professional development educator for the National Academy of Sports Medicine, producing content for GAMTV, Fit and Yoga, and writes for professional publications. Please help me welcome Miss Angie Miller. Hi, Angie.
Hey, April. How are you? It's so good to be here.
It's awesome to have you here as well. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Wellness Driven Life Show today. It's such an honor because you've got this wealth of experience, and I can't even read all of the things in the back of your name. You've got, you know, so many credentials. So I'm excited to have you here today. Let's start by sharing with the audience a little bit more about you.
All right. Well, I'm a mom of two adult daughters, and I work as a mental health therapist for Atrium Health. So I work in their employee assistance program, which is a short-term counseling model. And because I'm a licensed clinical mental health counselor, but I'm also a certified wellness coach. So I do coaching on the side, mostly geared toward women and wellness, midlife and beyond. And I host, as you said, NASM's Strong Mind, Strong Body podcast. I have four sisters, a cat and a dog. Let's see, huh? What else do you want to know, April?
You do have some wonderful things in quality. What I would love to know, Angie, is kind of your history and your background of really what brought you to being where you are today. You are definitely a light, especially like you said, for women and showing them kind of the way in the world to both physical and mental health awareness and avenues. So what was it throughout your life that really brought you to this point of wanting to engage and learn more about these fields?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. I was telling one of my daughters the other day that when I was in eighth grade, I had to do a paper on what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I remember I did it on counseling, and I remember my mom taking me to interview a therapist at the time. But I think really, it was a number of things. When I graduated from college, I went away to college. I was the first generation college student in my family, so no one had ever gone prior to me. And so I went away to college, didn't know what I wanted to do, started studying education, became a school teacher, and I moved to Kansas City, Missouri, and didn't know anybody. And it was the first time that I had, you know, I grew up and we lived in Iowa in one home my whole life, except for a short period of time when I lived overseas. And then when I was in college, I had studied in Switzerland, but for the most part, I was pretty grounded. So I go away to college. I graduate. I go to Kansas City because I was like, well, I can't go back to Iowa. I mean, somebody has to pay my bills and that's me. So I moved to Kansas City. I don't know anybody and I'm lonely. And I joined a gym, a Bally's Health Club. And I started taking group fitness classes. And the instructor asks me, she's like, you know, have you ever thought about teaching? And I thought, well, gosh, you know, I like to tell people what to do. And I started to find my inner sporty spice because I was never really a girl who liked sports. I hated PE. I never considered myself an athletic person. But if you put me among a group of predominantly women, which is was back then, I found that I built a community and I had friends and I loved that. So I started teaching group fitness classes and I had gotten my master's in mental health at the time. So I started doing school counseling. My husband's job started moving us. And education is much like therapy. Your credential doesn't go with you. So I decided to deep dive full time into fitness and become a fitness educator and a fitness instructor. And then some years went on. I started producing fitness videos. You'll still see them on Collage Video and Amazon. And I got a distributor for the fitness videos and moved into education. And then in 2012, my daughters were going to grow up and move away from home. And my mom was passing from dementia. Mm-hmm. And I started to have this moment of what am I going to do and who am I going to be when I grow up? And I don't identify as a daughter or a mom who's needed on a day-to-day basis. What am I going to do with my life? So I went to a university and started kind of beating down doors. Like I can either teach in the counseling department or I can teach in maybe a kinesiology department. And so I got hired to teach stress management because he said, I like the bridge between fitness and mental health. I like that you have a master's in counseling, but you've also been in fitness for 20 something years. And my life was kind of a hot mess at the time because my mom was dying. My daughter was struggling. We had moved at a bad time in her life. And I thought, God, you know, I have some imposter syndrome. How do I teach stress management when my own personal life is falling apart? Mm-hmm. And in that journey, I realized that I wished maybe that I had left mental health too far back in my path and I needed to go back in. So I re-upped my license, took a bunch of courses. I was teaching full-time at Northern Illinois University, and so I was getting courses for free, but I was teaching full-time and taking night courses, so putting in like 16, 18-hour days to re-up my license. And I went back into mental health. We moved one more time. I left the university, and throughout all of this, just remained as a fitness educator. NASM will sponsor me to speak at conferences throughout the globe. And what I really found is just through all of that, sift away all the layers. The thing that I think I enjoy the most is every single time we moved, I would join a gym, I would meet a community of people, and I would automatically feel grounded to an area. And what always was the common denominator was group fitness classes. It didn't matter that I have a master's in counseling or that I could be, you know, none of that mattered. What really mattered was what grounded me to the community and made me feel at home. And that's when I really found my passion for helping women and of course, men, because I speak to audiences in mental health and corporate settings everywhere. But I really just decided I wanted to bridge all of my knowledge in fitness and mental health and use my love for education to bring that to people and help them feel good inside and out. That's really a long explanation.
No, that's great. I love that you brought up the community aspect. Sorry, I have a little reverb there, but that piece is so essential. So when we talk about what are the keys for really living optimally in life, and community is one of those pieces. And when you're moving around abroad all the time, right, and you have to make new connections, that can be extremely, extraordinarily difficult for people. And there's all sorts of different thoughts behind these things and experts out there that say, you know, you should stay in one place and really build community. So I think it's so valuable that you offer that because we do move around nowadays because we are able to, because the jobs require it, you know, so families don't always just stick in one place. It's more uncommon now. So how do we invite that sense of community? And so the fact that you are saying that you had had that almost instantly. You were able to ground yourself within that physical space. And not only that, but what better way to really connect with others than while we are being physical? That physical movement is that one other of those key things that we need for our overall well-being.
Yeah, it's definitely, and you know, it's funny because the work that I do, like in mental health, I can't be friends with my clients.
Right.
And, you know, I can't invite them out to go have a beverage or go to dinner. But again, group fitness is that common denominator. And I tell you what was a soul crusher is when we moved to Charlotte, my daughters were grown and gone. My sisters are in a faraway state. My mom has passed. And the pandemic hit right after we moved. And so the gyms were closed. And yeah. There went my sense of how do I ground myself to Charlotte and feel that. And it really made me, it really reinforced how important that is to me because I'm a social person. And so it really has been, I think it's profound that we all find that way to create community, whether it's meetup groups, whether it's group fitness, whatever it is that, and it may be different depending on where you live, right?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I want to go back a little bit too during that time period with your daughters and your mother that's dying. So you have this pivotal time in your life where you weren't really shaped up in the mental health world, but yet you're being invited to explore that again, to teach that again. I like to say, you know, once taught, twice learned. And it's very interesting to me, and tell me what your thoughts are, when we are experiencing these difficulties in life, and then we come to a time when we have to step into this so-called leadership role and how that helps heals. What was your experience with that?
You know, that's a great way of putting it because that's so true. And in the process of teaching stress during the most stressful time, I realized that I became a stress expert, if you will. As I taught my students all these ways to deal with stress, I practiced those ways. During that time, I went to a hypnotherapist because we were talking about hypnotherapy. We were talking about all the different ways from visualization to meditation to yoga to reframing thoughts. And so through that process of teaching, I think we learn the most when we teach material to others. Remember, that's how I got through college and grad school was rewriting my notes, teaching the content to someone else because that embeds it in my brain. So It was healing. It was healing for me, but I think it was healing for my students too, that I still hear from students that I taught stress management to.
Yeah, I think definitely that's that relational aspect, right? I feel, Angie, that stories are so powerful. I think that that's a huge part of the show and why we have many guests come on here to share the stories. And I know that you experienced the same thing with your podcast and the things that you do. But that is that piece, that connection piece that we can relate to each other with, that we feel like I'm not alone in this, that, oh my gosh, you're human too. This happens to you. You feel these feelings as well. And it is such a strong piece.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it means that we have to allow ourselves to get vulnerable.
Yes.
And I think that's maybe part of what separates those who teach and those who connect. And so it's one thing to teach stress management. It's another thing to connect from here and from here to that, all those concepts, and to say, you know, life is going to bring us difficulty. There's no doubt about it. And my goal in teaching this course isn't to tell you how to avoid stress. My goal is to tell you how to walk right into it, get into the dirt, get into the mud, get dirty with it, get ugly, cry those big tears. And then when you come out on the other side, you're going to feel so empowered knowing that you have the tools to do that. And your tools are going to change because you're going to change and life is going to change. Right.
Oh, see, that's a very good point that you bring up, Angie, that the tools change because you change. Change is the only constant, right? And so I think that's really important that you bring that up. Can you give a couple of examples of that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, at the time even that I was teaching that course, at that time, that was hands down probably the most stressful time of my life. You know, watching my mom pass, watching my teenage daughter just really, really struggle. And being an empath, I'm struggling with them and I'm going down with them, right? And so that was a really, really challenging time. But then since then, there's been other challenging times. And I'm glad I had that because I'm more resilient and capable. But the challenges change, therefore, our techniques have to change. So I had a recent medical setback. Fitness and exercise has always been my way that I move through very difficult circumstances. So when you take away movement and you give me pain and injury, I'm not sure what to do, right? And so I had to figure that one out and say, okay, I'm not my best self. And then to be vulnerable in that space and to be able to say, you're right, I'm not my best self.
Yeah. Do you feel, because that too has happened to me, I agree with you. Movement has always been my, I don't know if I want to say escape, but it's a sense of escape. And it's also empowers me. Like there's so many things about movement that really helps. And when it is taken, it just disrupts the whole world. So what was that like for you and how did you get back on board? But my biggest question is, do you also feel like that kind of stripped what you believe to be a sense of identity?
Yeah, that's, and that's all like, that's all very good because you're right. It is much of how I identify. And it is so much of why I wanted to talk to women because again, I didn't grow up Sporty Spice, right? I didn't grow up liking sports. I didn't grow up understanding my body. I didn't even know my body had any athletic capabilities. And if I would have followed all my male gym teachers, I'm pretty sure I would have grown up certain that my body didn't have any athletic capabilities. So when I built body confidence, I built emotional confidence. And I got this sense of, I can do anything I set my mind to. And so recently I've had a pretty severe setback medically, like I said. And so I've had to do a lot of journaling, a lot of other things that I've always done, but do it more. I've had to allow myself to be more vulnerable, to literally cry more, to lean on people more, which isn't something I was always loving that I would do. Maybe I love other people leaning on me, but not so comfortable in being the vulnerable person. And so I had to find these other ways that I could get through it. And I'm still finding these ways. I'm still realizing, to your point, that it is a big part of how I identify is being connected to my body helps me connect to my mind. So how can I connect to my body differently? So I've taken a ton more walks and I've had to lean into the idea that walking is exercise, it's movement, and movement moves the emotions as much as the body, and it moves the blood and it moves them, you know, gets the muscles responsive and we just feel better. I think it's, at first I was like, oh, I'm lowering my expectations. I'm only walking. And then it was that reframing of, no, you're not lowering your expectations. You're shifting the way that you look at movement. You don't have to beat the heck out of yourself to consider it a good workout.
Yeah. Yeah. And, thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing all of that, because that's where it gets real and it gets raw, especially when you are an influencer, when you're a leader, when you're a coach and you're in front of people and you have this identity persona that you want to portray because this is you and this is what you're teaching and coaching and leading others to do. And when that's shaken up, it's like, oh my gosh, who am I? I'm not good enough. And it's easy to go that route. And at the same time, it forces us to rethink and redo things differently. Just like you had discussed, you're not going to utilize the same tools all of the time. They're going to change because we change. So in that, it's learning something different about ourselves. It's that self awareness, it's the self-reflection, all of those pieces that start coming to light in a different manner. And like you shared, you are journaling, you're sitting with yourself, you're more quiet, you're forced to actually slow down and really go more within, as opposed to concentrating so much on the external that you have been for so much of your life.
Yeah. And, you know, every good therapist needs a therapist. So I have a therapist on speed dial, and just kidding, I wish she was. But I also have, you know, there something came to my mind when you were saying all of that. I think what really came to my mind is self-compassion. For all of the compassion that I hold for others, I struggle to hold that compassion toward myself. And so perfectionism is no one's friend. And yet for high achieving, especially women, that perfectionism and the imposter syndrome and all of that. And it's that leaning into self-compassion and saying, if only for now, or if only for today, I'm going to have to not be the person that I thought I was, but I'm going to be the person that I am.
Yeah, that's powerful. Like, always striving to be and do your best with the circumstances and environment that you have. And, you know, what I really enjoy, kind of, I don't know if I want to call it time stamping, but when you're going through the muck and things are just difficult and they're not the same, you're not in your normal routine, things have just changed so drastically. It's like, how Philip Kuntz actually taught me this. I listened to one of his talks, and he said, make it to the next meal. And so it's, a lot of us like to say, just, you know, go take it day by day. And he said, well, we'll just make it to the next meal. Just make it to the next meal. So I think that that can be incredibly empowering when things are really, really difficult. And I have experienced throughout my life so many drastic ups and downs where I'll be so ill one day where I can hardly move or get out of bed. And then the next day, you know, things are much, much better. And I'm fluid in my movements. It's such a drasticness that I have experienced. But what it has taught me is that change is constant and it will change. It doesn't matter. It, like, change is inevitable. And maybe it's through death, but it's still a change. It's still a transformation. It's just our physical bodies moving more and fully into the energetic. Yeah. So,
well, and to, you know, you're right. And change is constant. And also without it, we wouldn't be learning. We wouldn't be growing. We wouldn't be evolving. We would take things for granted, and we would lose sight of our, I mean, as corny as it sounds, we really would lose sight of our blessings. And I think, you know, my family history, my genetics, if you will, aren't necessarily on my side. And so I don't necessarily come from a healthy bunch, if you will. And I always thought that fitness was going to be my hall pass. I always called it my hall pass. Well, I'm going to fight my genetics. I'm going to fight my history, because I have been working out since I was 20 something. Therefore, I have a hall pass. And over the past 5 years, I've had two big things come up where I realized I don't have a hall pass. And I had to have a moment with my body where I was like, hold on, why did you betray me? I thought that we had this agreement that I was going to treat you well, and I was going to feed you well, and I was going to exercise you. And in return, you were going to give me not just longevity, but healthy longevity. Because I always say, I don't want to live forever, or I don't want to live long. I want to live well. And so I've had to have some meetings with my mind and my body, and just remember that there have been some disappointments, and yet I'm still healthy and strong, and I'm still moving around. And so it's always that constant reframing of, sometimes when you go to bed and your thoughts are getting really ugly, a lot of times what I always say is just rethink it in the morning.
Yeah. I feel that way, because oftentimes when my mind goes amok and it's going to the gutter, like, consistently, I know that it's because I'm just really tired, and the my mind just goes in the places that it shouldn't be going, because it's having a hard, it needs a rest. So mm-hmm. I love that you just say, let's rethink this in the morning, shall we? So really being able to listen to your body and how it's responding and picking up on those key things and knowing that there's nothing wrong with you, but it's trying to give you some signals to maybe do things a little differently, like take a rest or drink some water or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So we're going to move into our first commercial. And what I love about the commercial already is our sponsor is it's a hypnotherapy, and you have already talked about that a little bit. So we'll go into that first and we will come back to you, Angie. So stay tuned.
All right.
Are you ready to take control of your ride to wellness? Rev up with Driven Livin'. Visit www.drivenlivin.com and buckle up for a journey. Get exclusive access to our Wellness Driven Life Show guest portal, where you can dive deep into the minds of our esteemed guests. Sign up for our newsletter and get insider scoops on these distinguished personalities. It's like having a backstage pass to their life-changing wisdom. But that's not all. You'll also receive a free hug. You heard me right, a free hug. An enlightening ebook from the Driven Livin' team. Discover the science-backed benefits of hugging yourself. It's a fill-up for your wellness tank. Because at Driven Livin', we believe in fueling your journey to wellness, both physically and psychologically. So what are you waiting for? Visit www.drivenlivin.com today.
Our lives were never the same after we learned our 21-year-old daughter, Kristen, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. It's a parent's worst nightmare. How much did we really know about domestic violence back then? Clearly not enough. Now we know plenty. We know domestic violence, or DV, can happen to anyone. One in three women suffer physical violence at the hands of intimate partners during their lifetimes. One in three. I'm Bill Mitchell, host of the When Dating Hurts podcast. And my interviews with DV counselors, law enforcement, and especially actual DV survivors give the pandemic of domestic violence the attention it deserves. The When Dating Hurts podcast. It's a series of lives being saved.
So back to you, Angie. I love our conversation that we're having. And I think one thing that I appreciate about you the most is that you are very transparent with the ongoings of your life. So you have, and you look beautiful. You are beautiful. You're doing all the things. You're this incredible public figure where you lead others into mental and physical health. And you still experience setbacks. It makes you very human. And I think that it's very important for people to have that understanding because I think so much in society today, people view those public figures as something that's unobtainable. And it's just not. We are all just as human as anyone else. We experience life because life is life for everyone. And we all don't get through it without having hardships. And so I think it's just so important to relate to people on that human level and have come to this understanding of, yes, me too.
Yeah. And it's me too. And it's me too, but different, right? So we all are going to have we're all going to stumble and fall and we're all going to have these setbacks, but they're going to be different. And even if they're the same, we're going to experience them differently. And I had a guest on my podcast and he was talking about how a lot of times we don't want to share something till we get through it because we tell ourselves, well, I need to be healed or I need to be better before I open up Pandora's box. Because if I tell people my problem and I don't have a solution, then they might just think I'm complaining. And I thought that was interesting because I thought I had to call myself out. I do it all the time. I do it all the time when I'm in the middle of something. I don't want to talk about it. I need to have a solution. I need to know what's going to happen next. Mm. And that could be years, frankly. And sometimes there is no one solution. Sometimes it's just one step at a time to feel a little bit better than we felt yesterday.
Yeah.
So well, why?
Yeah, there's, you know, there's so many different levels. Like if we take grief, for example, there's all of these different stages. They don't happen in sync, right? They're different for everyone. And you can always go back to experiencing, you know, one level or one emotion in that, you know, segment of experiences. So it's like this ebb and flow of feelings, and you never quite know what's going to come up. It's different for everyone, and it's always different, right? There's no way of really knowing what that looks like. And grief is experienced in so many different ways as well. It's not only death, but it could be a moving, it could be job replacement, it could be, you know, experiencing your children going through things. Grief is seen in many, many different ways.
Yes. And I used to tell my students all the time, like, don't be a stress hater. Like, don't judge someone else's stress, because some people, a little bit of rocking the boat will really throw them off the edge. And for other people, they could go through the most tumultuous waters and still maintain their sense of self through all of that. And it's that same thing with grief. You know, my mom, I lost my mom when she was in her 70s, and I found myself doing that sometimes. Someone would tell me my mom just passed, and I say, how old was she? 95. And I had a little bit of that in my mind going, oh, you know, she was 95. And I was like, okay, there you are. You're judging, and you're right, assuming that that grief doesn't match your grief. And yeah, I think we all have to keep context and say, yeah, grief is different for all of us. And grief comes in a lot of ways. Grief over divorces, relationships, kids going away, losing parents, all these other things, right? And like you said, grief over leaving a home and moving across the country.
Yeah. Yeah. It's anything that really disrupts the normal pattern. And we as humans are, that's what we do. That's really how we work well, is by doing the same things day in and day out. We have this consistency, this routine that we're all about, and that's how we function. And when that's disrupted, it disrupts everything.
Yeah. And I think that's where emotional agility comes in. And I think that's where we have to understand that emotions are in motion, which is why, you know, which is why I came up with an emotional motion, because emotions are in motion just like our body is. Mm. And it's that being flexible in our thoughts and our way that we adapt and respond versus, you know, rigidity is no one's friend. And we all know those people who feel the need to control everything down to, you know, the second that you get there and what you're going to do every moment of that vacation. And rigidity is no one's friend, because when things don't go as planned, people can really get caught up in, it should be this way. And I always tell people, you know, the shoulds are shame. And Albert Ellis used to say, you know, you need to stop shoulding yourself. Or no, actually, I think it was Albert Ellis who said, we must. And he said, stop masturbating. You know, I must do this, I must do that.
Yeah.
Instead of, I could do it because I'll feel better. Or, you know, I could take a walk because I'll feel better. Maybe it's not the same as me doing an hour run, but a walk will feel better than me not doing anything.
Yeah. You know, and you and I were talking about this just a little bit when we talk about the research of the blue zones. And, you know, so much of what the people who have that longevity piece taken, you know, they've got it down in certain pockets around the globe, and really they're not pushing their bodies physically to any crazy extent. It's really just the normal day in and day out movements or chores, if you will, or walking around and actually walking or squatting and using their bodies in just a normal way, but actually moving them. And I just love, Angie, how you describe that movement is like it activates those emotions, and that's what it is. My husband always says motion creates emotion. And it's so funny, because in the beginning, I didn't really get it, or I thought, I don't want to be more emotional.
I don't want to cry more.
Right. So what do you mean motion creates emotion? I don't want that. I want to get away from that. I don't want to feel. And as empaths, I'm not even saying that right, but you feel very deeply. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know why, and I don't want to feel this deeply. But the movement has always helped. And it just works things out naturally the way the body and mind is intended to function together.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, 100%. And movement is different for everyone. And I think it comes down to just inviting people to do some self-reflection. You know, one of the biggest things that I teach trainers is, what if we stop telling people what to do? What if we invite people to figure out what they need to do, which is what motivational interviewing, and that's the foundation of motivational interviewing, is I invite you to reflect on your life and what's working and what's not. And I invite you to kind of determine how you're going to overcome the obstacles that are getting in your way and then create a path forward. But it's your journey. So your hands are on the wheel. You're in the driver's seat. I'm in the passenger seat. I don't need to just tell you what to do 24/7, because we all know that if you raise kids and you raise kids who you make all their decisions for them, I taught university students. I know those students. I know how much they struggle. I know how much having full autonomy, all of a sudden they go away first day of college and they have full autonomy and they don't know what to do with it because they've never been given the reins. They've never had the wheel, hands on the wheel. And so the more we can create autonomous individuals, and you know, was it William Desi? I don't know if it's DC or Desi. And he talks about, you know, what makes us all want to do things. And it's, we need to feel like we have autonomy, like we have a sense of personal autonomy. We have a skin in the game. We need to feel connectedness, like I'm connected to you. I have this community and I feel connected to this experience. And I can't remember what the third one was, but you know, that's a big part of it, right?
So,
on a tangent there.
No, I think that it's really important that you bring up that piece, because I believe that it starts with us. I mean, really, if we want to continue to evolve in the best way, it starts with the self. And that is making the decisions of what is it that I enjoy doing? What am I passionate about? What is my purpose? And it takes that self-reflection and that deep dive into questioning what those things are, especially in this world of chaos around us, where we're in the rat race and we don't necessarily take time to slow down and stop and reflect. And so, Angie, I'm curious, is that what you have experienced and kind of what you've learned, what your soul's been guiding you to, is to really experience that piece of yourself?
To experience, meaning the...
To slow down, to self-reflect, to where it's not as much moving in that physical aspect, and to know thyself.
And to eat a piece of humble pie.
Yes. Yeah. Humility is,
to not feel fully in control, and then to reframe what control means, you know, so I call it positive control. Sometimes when something happens, we get caught up in this idea that we no longer have control. There's something wrong with my body. I'm not in control. I can't fix it. I don't know if it's going to get fixed. And then the mind goes, do, 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 do. But where do I have positive control? Well, you're right. I have positive control over the journaling and the self-reflection, shedding big tears, being vulnerable, taking walks, just reframing what that looks like. So, and also just that even when we quote have answers, it doesn't mean that it's going to go the way we think it's going to go. So, right. We're never really fully in control. I think it's sometimes like, I really don't have the control that I think I have. And maybe there's a lot of power in that and a lot of sense of calm in that, is I don't need to control everything that happens in my life. I can just let it come as it comes and know that I have the tools to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because I've proven that to myself.
Oh, I love that. You have the tools to deal with it. Let it come. So surrender was this huge lesson that I had to learn when, and that control piece, you know, that is something that I have always held on to very tightly, of where I want to be able to have that control, because then I can feel safe.
Yes.
If I am in control. And yeah, when everything goes crazy and you just don't have control, it's completely out of your hands. The really important things in life are, you have no other choice but to surrender to it and to utilize the tools that you have and that you're now learning to navigate it, to deal with it.
Yeah. And create, you know, create, like I said, create the positive control. I mean, I get up, I make my bed every day. My house is always clean, you know, whatever gives me clarity. And, and also you mentioned that word purpose. And I think that's huge, is it's always going back to what are your values? What's your purpose? And, I took a workshop with Stephen Hayes. He does acceptance and commitment therapy. And I've done it twice since then, but this is the first time I was asked to do this. I had to write my obituary in the workshop, and we had to work backwards. And so
begin with the end in mind.
Yes. You know, how do you want people to remember you? What do you most want to be remembered for? Who do you want to impact? Who do you want to be standing in that room when you pass talking about you? But what we also did was he had us make a timeline, and we had to do it in increments from 0 to 100. And then we had to put a line on when we, how old we think we'll be when we live. And then he said, I want you to look at where your dot is on the line. And I had a moment, because I'm in my 50s. I had a moment. I was like, oh, hold on here. Sorry, I got to leave this workshop. I'm running out of time. And I talked to a couple
I don't have time to be here. I have to live.
Turns out I'm working on the back end and I'm really short on time. I had a moment and I still think about that. And I had a talk with one of the presenters afterwards, and I said, therein lies the struggle of your purpose in having me do that was to tell me to make the most of my time. But my brain went to, oh my gosh, you're running out of time. So my brain went to go, 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 go. And I know what you really wanted me to say was ground, make use of your time. And so we had to kind of nuance that and talk about how do I lean into myself and stop trying to grab it all like I'm going to run out of time.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you know when I find the answer to that one.
That's really a profound perspective when it is something that hits. I Manly and I just wrote our obituaries this year as well. And yeah, I think it's very important to really reflect on the end in mind and see where you're at. And it does, Angie, it brings up other things and how you feel about that. And okay, I feel like this, why? And how can I kind of flip that script?
Yeah. Yeah. And why am I worried about this person or that situation when they didn't even make my obituary?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a cool experience that you had. And so I invite people to do that because it is a cool experience. Now, Angie, you have interviewed so many people, not even just in the interviews, but really experienced a lot of really amazing human beings. Is there some examples that you've had throughout your time that really were a profound experience for you? Really were any aha moments that you had with someone?
Yeah, a lot of them actually. Because like I said, I think I really had that teaching stress management and having students come up to me and share things that they had never shared with anyone. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about stress and ways to navigate it, a lot of emotion comes up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was in Thailand last year and I was presenting at a conference and I was talking about stress and resilience. And afterwards, three women came up crying and said, you know, in the Asian culture, we don't always talk about our feelings. It's not always something that is promoted. And, you know, mental health is just something that we're starting to maybe whisper about. Mm. And it really, it gave them a space. It gave them a safe space to explore that it's okay to talk about stress and emotions and life's difficulties. And it's okay to admit it, to admit that you might feel stressed or you might feel down. And that's part of emotional agility, is being flexible with our emotions, but also being able to experience the full range of emotions. And I, you know, I wrote an article about exercise and anxiety, and I said, you know, it's just like full range of motion and fitness. We need to experience a full range of emotions. But there's so many people who've shared their stories with me. And I always say that I'm kind of like a vault. I'm going to die with a lot of people's stories. But I think what I get the most out of it is that I realize that we are a vulnerable society, and we all go through so many different things. And it's always amazing to me to hear someone's story and then to see how they've walked out on the other side and that they have the courage to share it and to keep going. I don't know that I've got any one story that really stands out.
Yeah. Well, how does it feel to begin to share your own stories and kind of flip that? I know that you talked a little bit about how it's been difficult for you to really flip that and be the vulnerable person on the other end. How has it been going for you?
We need to end now. No. So my first journey with being really unprepared was I was in Chicago still. We hadn't moved here yet. And I was having a lot of heart palpitations and a lot of real interesting. It was like, oh, my heart's doing backflips. And oh, there's somebody doing cartwheels in there, almost like you're pregnant, but it's not a baby and it's in your heart. Mm-hmm. So I did what I like to do, which is wait a couple of years. And I moved here and I went into a doctor and he said, you know, you're real fit and you do well on a stress test, but maybe you should have like a cardiac calcium score. And, you know, fast forward, basically what came of it was like most of the women in my family have cardiovascular disease. And so on the inside, fit healthy. On the outside, fit healthy. On the inside, not so much. And I said, gosh darn, you know, and I had kind of a meltdown in his office. And I said, you know, I thought I had a hall pass. And he's like, well, imagine if you didn't exercise, like look at the family members that you've just mentioned, look where you would be.
Yeah.
And so he and I still, he's my heart doctor. He's my, one of my favorite humans. And, you know, I remember one of the ways he got me was when I went in and I started like, you know, kind of, my friend calls it bleeding all over the page. And I was, you know, having an emotional meltdown. And I said, the problem is doctors don't really listen to women, especially women with heart disease, because women present differently. And he said, what did you say? And I started cracking up because he was messing with me, because I had just said doctors don't listen to women. But anyway, so I appreciate a little humor. And, I'm still not at a place where I like to talk about that very often, if at all. And it's still just one of those that I navigate. I know it's there. I'm trying to do all the right things, eat healthy, exercise. But there's that part of me that's like, some people do have just better genes and they realistically could probably eat not so healthy and not exercise and maybe have a better internal system than even I do. And so I had to get through that whole stop comparing and be where you are and accept that you have this, do all the right things the best way that you can, and it will be what it is.
It will be what it is. And I think that it's just the way that we show up and just the fact that you're able to share and willing to do that is such a huge light in the world. So thank you for that, Angie. And I also feel that, you know, again, sharing those words of wisdom and light really truly empowers the whole world. It's like this domino effect, if you will, where it's like when you go out in public and a smile is contagious, it's similar to that as well. So you are really starting to branch out and share more of yourself, and you're continuing to interview others, and you've talked about, you know, maybe even branching out to do some other things. What's next for you?
What's next for me is working on a live women's retreat. So I've done virtual retreats and I work with women in coaching, but to host a live retreat and to bring women together and allow them a safe space to share their stories and to be a sounding board for one another and to bring in those factors of movement and mindset and help women gain the tools, the cognitive tools, because there's that cognitive reframing and the things that we can do to create agility. But then there's also social things that we can do. I mean, emotional agility is built in many, many ways. It's through cognitive reframing, but it's also through community. It's also through acceptance and self-compassion. And so I want to bring women together and bring them into a space of healing, but also a safe space where they can share their stories, but they can also walk away and there's an after story. I've been on many, many retreats and I feel like you feel good when you're there, then you go home and you get back to real life and it's like, oh, but I don't feel the same now because I'm back in real life. So I want to give takeaway tools and follow-ups where that stays with them for a longer period of time and there's more continuity in what they learned and what they experienced on the retreat.
Yeah, it sounds to me like that is helping build lifelong relationships, you know, in order to be able to have that continuous follow-up to see how are we doing. I would agree with you. I think that it's really, really important to have the things that are kind of letting you know that you're remaining on track, that others are remaining on track with you. There's a huge sense of power when we do things in groups, when it's more than just us and we really take all of our energy together and support one another. It's this big powerhouse.
It is. It really is. And we all like to feel connected to something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, whether that's a spiritual belief or a religious belief, whether it's family, but I think for a lot of us worldwide, we don't have that sense of connection that we used to. We don't have the strong communities like in the blue zones. We don't have that strong sense of community or where lots of generations live under one roof. And so we have to find ways to create that so that we don't feel like we're out there by ourselves.
I love so much that you bring that up because I was just talking to my husband about that the other day. I'm like, how do we create this? You know, when we all are spread out with our families and we don't necessarily have these pockets of community where we're right there with somebody day in and day out. And, you know, we live in such a beautiful time in the world where we are able to meet like this, where we are able to communicate across the globe. It's so powerful. And so how do we truly utilize that to the best that we can and continue to hold on to that community piece, that piece of connection that is so vital for us. So, Angie, I love what you're doing out there. Thank you so much for sharing your brilliance, your light, your stories, your vulnerability. And so I want to make sure that everyone knows where to find you. And for those of you tuning in and listening, it is www.angiemillerfitness.com. And I'll go ahead and read that. It's AngieMillerFitness.com. And that is also in the description below. You can always find that there. And if you have any questions, you can leave them in the comment section and we'll get back to you. Angie, you've been so awesome to be here on the Wellness Driven Life Show. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience today?
I think I just would like to say to women, speaking of heart disease, you know, women postmenopause, we are more, you know, our increased risk for heart disease. And so, you know, women, we present differently than men when it comes to heart attack, stroke, and heart conditions. And so be your best advocate for your body and for your mind. And know that you know your body and your mind more than anyone else. And so if you, you know, be careful when you're hiring a personal trainer or a therapist or a physician, and remember that you are the customer. You are the person, whether, you know, you're paying through insurance or not, you're still the customer. And so I think there's that sense of feel free to be fully in charge of you and your life and to listen to experts, but also to do your own research so that you feel empowered to manage situations that come your way. You know, for me, education has always been how I have a sense of going back to control, is investigate, read up everything I can learn about something so that I feel like I have a handle on it, right? Even if I can't fix it, I understand it. So I think that's my parting message.
I think that's a great parting message. And you and me both, the life learner aspect. And I do strongly feel that that is how I too have continued to be resilient throughout life, through all of the changes and ups and downs and disease and loss and all of the things, is really educating myself. So I have an awareness of what could potentially be going on. And there's definitely so much of the empowering aspect that it gives. So thank you again, Angie, so much for being on the Wellness Driven Life Show. And so for everyone watching, thank you so much for all of your support, and goodbye for now.
Thank you.